Hi everyone, I'm Josh, and this is the Josh Wright Piano Podcast. Today we're going to be discussing shifting versus crossing. First of all, we'll discuss what that even is, and second of all, we're going to go about it in a roundabout way, showing you some different strategies with both finger action and rotation to help you in your scales and arpeggios, and these can also apply to many different scenarios in your repertoire pieces and in your technical studies. The first thing that I wanted to do was read Sergio's request for this. We got our first podcast request from Sergio a few days ago, and he said, I have an idea or suggestion for an upcoming episode for your podcast. In your video about scales and arpeggios, you had mentioned that slower scales and arpeggios require more crossover, and faster scales and arpeggios require less crossover and more shifting. So this idea of shifting versus crossing, what it is, if you're not familiar with it, as you play a scale, as I go to that F right there, so C, D, E, F, I have to do some sort of movement to get my hand to that F because I'm going thumb, second finger, third finger, and then thumb again. And today we're going to be talking about the proper movements that you can do within a scale in order to facilitate a more easy and fluid movement to get those scales and arpeggios sounding smoother. He said, now this brings me to my idea and suggestion. Could you do a podcast episode that covers the topic about shifting in fast scales and arpeggios? Because whenever I start to speed up my scales and arpeggios, I feel I'm not shifting correctly and I don't understand it enough. Would it be possible to go into more detail about shifting in fast scales and arpeggios? That would be spectacular. Kind regards, Sergio. So thanks for your question, Sergio, and I'm excited to discuss this today because this is a hot topic that a lot of people get really heated about, but for a lot of years I thought, oh, those Taubman specialists are kind of heated about this and everybody else does this. And then I spoke to one of the greatest Taubman teachers alive today, Robert Dorso, and it was really enlightening. And I want to not only discuss things he taught me in that episode that you can watch on YouTube, you can just type in Josh Wright Taubman, T-A-U-B-M-A-N, and that should come up, our interview together. But I also want to discuss things that have just helped me in regular practice and that are currently helping me. I'm preparing a couple of different video tutorials right now. One of them is the most requested tutorial I've ever received. It is the Beethoven Moonlight Sonata, third movement. And there's this kind of hairy little passage here that goes, how do we get around that? And also this etude, how do we get around that with ease? And if anyone of you have not heard Do-Hyun Kim's recording from the recent Tchaikovsky competition, go watch that. I think it's the best recording I've ever heard of that piece. D-O-H-Y-U-N space K-I-M, Do-Hyun Kim. It's unbelievable. So let's first talk about three types of rotation, then we're going to talk about purling, and then we are going to talk about applying these two concepts to scales and arpeggios. Because we're on a podcast in audio form only, I have to do a better job of explaining this. I can't just show you. So turn your hand like you're turning a doorknob. That is one way of moving. Now, bend your wrist back a little bit so your fingertips are pointing to the sky. Now bend your wrist forward so your fingertips are pointing at the ground. So a forward and back hinge. That's another point of rotation. Now twist your wrist so your pinky is pointing 90 degrees to the right. Now twist your wrist kind of and move your elbow out a little bit as you do this, so your pinky is now pointing to the left. That's a more lateral shifting. That's kind of like a little semicircle shift. Those are the three points of rotation. Again, the doorknob turning, the up and down shifting, and then the lateral shift where you're kind of twisting your wrist. And that twisting of the wrist, you want to be careful with because that can get a lot of tension built into it very quickly. Now what do we do? The next thing I want to talk about is purling. Purling is something completely different than this rotation concept that we've been talking about. It has to do with playing the keys very short So I remember hearing this in Murray Pariah's playing when I was 9 years old, learning the E flat major Mozart concerto, K271. And I was like, how is he getting that light of a sound? And over many years of experimenting, I finally figured out, oh, all he's really doing is purling, which is just playing staccato in a very fast tempo. And you can think of it like plucking a guitar string, kind of pulling the key back ever so slightly. Don't go crazy with that idea, because that idea in and of itself can create a lot of tension in your hand. So keep your fingers not super curved, you know, fingertips pointing straight down into the keys. That can build up quite a bit of tension. But as you build that up, you can just stay closer to those keys, and pretty soon. Okay, so that's the second concept. Along with those three types of rotation, we talked about purling. Now, what does this have to do with shifting versus crossing in scales? I'm going to talk about scales first. So as you go from C, D, E, your wrist can hinge forward. It can hinge slightly to the right, like you're turning a doorknob. And it can hinge slightly with that semicircle rotation. So you can even do this on your leg if you're driving in the car, or you're at the gym or walking your dog. You can just kind of put your third finger down on your leg and just go in a little miniature circle. And you're feeling actually all three types of rotation that way. You're feeling the lateral rotation, you're feeling the up and down rotation, and you're feeling that doorknob turning rotation a little bit as well. So when you get to that E, C, D, E, you're going to get these seamless transitions. The thing you have to be really careful of is to not accent the note that comes right after that, and accenting those thumbs. So avoid that. But pretty soon, if you employ those different points of rotation, it will really help. And Robert Dorso's video interview really clarified that. It put into words what I had known for many years, but that I hadn't clarified as clearly as I could have in my teaching to students. So those three points of rotation, very helpful. Now, Sergio, how do we know shifting versus crossing? So I want to first talk about shifting. Shifting would be keeping your hand in pretty much the same position and just moving it up and down the keyboard. So my hand would just shift if I'm doing this. I'm not crossing at all to do that. The point that I made in my video, Shifting versus Crossing on YouTube, is that as you get faster and you start moving more fluidly up these scales, it requires less crossing, because the impetus or the momentum of your hand moving up would in and of itself get you into that next position without a lot of crossing. So it's a balancing act, Sergio and everyone else listening. It's not that, oh, if I'm at 140, which is probably around that tempo, that I'm not going to do any crossing at all. Or if I'm at 60, I'm not going to shift my hand whatsoever. The whole movement of the hand as it travels up the keyboard, no matter what tempo you're in, is going to have an effect on how much cross you can reasonably do. And as you increase your tempo, those crosses become minimized as the momentum of your hand takes over the movement to get into the next position. I want to quickly demonstrate with the Chopin Etude Opus 10 number 8, something I'm also preparing for a tutorial. Obviously need some work on that left hand accuracy, but I'm doing purling there, so I'm plucking the keys, and I'm doing a slight crossover, but I'm also using that speed momentum as I get into those faster tempi. To allow my hand to travel with the most freedom. Something that Robert Dorso had said in the interview is, he said, a great Taubman teacher and player would never let you know by the way they played that they were Taubman students. Basically, the Taubman approach, Dorothy Taubman was the, I guess, inventor of it. She taught all of these concepts, and she was helping a lot of injured pianists. Her work was quite noble, actually, the more I study it. A lot of people, I guess, take the Taubman approach out of context, and they just have their students endlessly rotating for years and years, and they never really get it. That's a low-quality Taubman teacher. The high-quality teachers get rid of any signs of that unnecessary rotation. The rotation is built into the practice session to get the hand moving in the right way, but then it's minimized, minimized, minimized until you get rid of it. So I couldn't think of a better way of explaining this than kind of instilling some of those concepts that Dr. Dorso and I had discussed. To move up and down the keyboard with less effort. One last thing that I want to talk about today before we end is this whole idea, this has been commanding my practice sessions lately, of observation, observing how the hand naturally wants to move to get into that next position. Now, if you're a brand new beginner, you're not going to know how the hand naturally moves. But if you're intermediate or getting to the advanced level, you're going to know that, okay, I got to kind of cross over and use different points of rotation to get to that next position, or that cross under right there. And I'm just going to go so slowly and feel the hand as fluidly, the hand move as fluidly as possible. And you can make fun little exercises out of this. You could do this. You could even just do this. 2-3-4-1-2. That's F, G, A, C, F. 2-3-4-1-2. And just going back and forth. So I hope this has provided clarity on the proper way to move, a discussion on shifting versus crossing, and remembering three types of rotation coupled with purling can help you move in a much more efficient way. If any of you have any questions, my email is josh@joshwrightpiano.com. I will also leave links to all of my social media profiles, a free webinar training featuring 10 of my favorite tips, and my personal website. I'll leave that link in the description below. I'm also new to this whole podcast thing, so I've heard that leaving a review can really help the ratings. So in an effort to get this out to as many people as possible, I would truly appreciate if you could leave a 5-star review if you are enjoying this podcast. If any of you have any questions, again, my email is josh@joshwrightpiano.com. Have a great week. Good luck in your practice sessions.